This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about MarTech from calendar weeks 22 and 23. Frenis is a B2B market research company that supports enterprise marketing teams in unlocking the full potential of their customer data with the help of AI. You can find more info in the description.
Right, so let's just get into it.
Yeah, let's dive in. Because what if I told you that, like, 95% of your marketing technology budget is currently pointed in the exact wrong direction?
Oh, man, that's a terrifying thought.
Right. Or that the CRM you've spent literally a decade meticulously building is actually the bottleneck holding your entire go-to-market strategy back. Welcome to the deep dive, everyone. If you're building or managing a B2B tech stack right now, you know how incredibly noisy it gets out there.
It's so noisy. I mean, you log on to LinkedIn and you're immediately bombarded with like 1,000 different ways you supposedly need to run your operations. So our mission today is to just cut through all that fluff.
Exactly. No abstract theory today.
Right. We've curated the absolute top MarTech trends buzzing across the feeds of actual B2B marketing professionals from the past 2 weeks. We're looking at what top operators are actually building right now. And we've broken this down into four interconnected themes to make sense of it all.
Yeah, we're going to hit AI agents and workflow automation, customer data and identity, composable MarTech architecture, and finally, marketing ops and the buyer experience. Okay, let's unpack this first theme, AI agents and workflow automation.
This is a huge one.
It is. And the conversation on LinkedIn has totally shifted. Like, for the last year, AI in marketing felt kind of like a parlor trick, you know?
Yeah.
But now it's actual boots on the ground execution.
Oh, completely. We're seeing teams deploy AI to solve very specific mechanical bottlenecks. Mm. A perfect example of this comes from Sarah McNamara. She just laid out four AI playbooks you can build this week using a tool like Clay.
Right, yeah.
And what's so cool is that we aren't just talking about generative AI writing text anymore. We're talking about functional agents that call APIs and make logical decisions.
Yeah, like her persona classifier, that really stood out to me. Mechanically, it takes an inbound lead, pings external databases to figure out company size, cross-references job titles with your internal matrix, and then applies a tag all in milliseconds.
Which is what?
Right. So your automated nurture tracks actually route to the right person instead of, you know, dumping a CFO and a junior dev into the exact same email sequence.
Exactly. She also detailed this account research agent that does the heavy lifting for account-based marketing. Like, before a sales rep even opens their laptop, this agent scrapes target accounts for recent news or hiring signals and drafts a personalized outreach email based on real-world events.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And my favorite part, she highlighted a surprise and delight physical note card sender.
Wait, really? A physical note card?
Yeah. The AI finds the closest corporate office for a target marketing leader and automatically tees up a physical mailer via direct mail API.
That is brilliant. Using hyper-modern digital infrastructure to create a totally analog human touch point. And, you know, Mark Killens actually pointed out a similar leap with conversions new agents. They can build out entire marketing ops, architectures, nurture sequences, scoring models, SLA flows in a fraction of the usual time.
Which is just a massive paradigm shift.
Yeah.
But I know you had some thoughts on this.
Yeah, I have to push back a little here. Like, are we just replacing manual chaos with automated chaos? I mean, it sounds like hiring a fleet of super interns. They work at the speed of light, but if you don't tell them exactly what good looks like, they'll just make mistakes thousands of times a minute.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. And that's the exact danger top operators are warning about. Alberto Farinato shared a breakdown of his team's real-world deployment of a lead scoring agent using Claude, HubSpot, and Clay.
Oh, I saw that. He didn't sugarcoat it at all.
Yes, not at all. He emphasized three critical hurdles to stop those super interns from wreaking havoc. First was calibration. You have to mathematically define what hot actually means for your sales funnel. You have to teach the AI about time velocity and signal decay.
Right, because downloading a highly technical white paper today is a massive signal. But if they did that 6 months ago and haven't clicked an email since that signal has decayed, if the AI doesn't understand time, it scores them both as hot leads.
Precisely. The second hurdle Farinato highlighted was token economics. Every time an AI model reads data or generates a response, it consumes tokens. Those cost fractions of a cent, but if you run a massive model on 50,000 leads in real time,
you just burn through your entire budget in a week.
Exactly. So they had to triage deciding what runs in real time versus what gets batched overnight to save money. And the third hurdle was business logic. Getting those unwritten rules out of people's heads and actually down on paper.
Because the AI can't read your mind.
Right.
What's fascinating here is how this connects to what Janet Gartua was saying. She argued that we are completely done with random acts of AI. The missing layer in RevOps right now is orchestration tools like Zapier.
Yeah, Phil Gamache added a great insight there too about fighting context rot. He mentioned using a weekly decision log agent to capture fast-moving context so human operators and AI agents actually stay on the exact same page.
So crucial.
But, you know, all these brilliant AI agents will just fail spectacularly if they are reading bad information, which smoothly pivots us to our second theme, customer data and identity.
Oh, the unglamorous data plumbing.
Yeah.
I mean, the shiny AI tools get all the budget, but the database architecture actually does the work.
Exactly. And Kita Wanketti shared this viral 5-step blueprint for building a MarTech stack in 2026. The takeaway was basically solve identity first, fix your data foundation, pick a core platform, add journey orchestration, and add AI last.
Yes, she had that great quote.
Oh, I loved it. She said, a shiny CDP sitting on top of dirty data is just expensive garbage.
It's brutal, but it's the truth. And interestingly, where we store that foundational data is shifting. Taft-Love noted a massive architectural shift. He argued the CRM is no longer the source of truth.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. For a decade, vendors told us the CRM was the absolute center of the universe, right? Now we're basically saying the CRM is just another satellite orbiting the data warehouse.
Yeah, because CRMs are prefab. They just can't handle complex BI queries. The cloud data warehouse is taking over. Adam Greco actually argued that a lot of companies are wildly overpaying for licensed customer data platforms when their own cloud data warehouse already has everything they need.
They just need a lightweight activation layer sitting on top.
Right. And Tony Byrne validated this too. He pointed out that identity resolution, or IDR, is currently the absolute hardest problem in MarTech.
Because B2B buyers act like consumers now?
Exactly. They research on their phone at night, download a white paper on a work laptop the next day, and sign up for a trial using a personal Gmail to avoid sales spam. Untangling those multiple trial accounts, that identity problem, is the visible symptom of a much deeper infrastructure challenge that AI is about to totally expose.
Yeah, and this realization that the data warehouse is the real core is forcing companies to completely rethink how they buy and assemble software. Which brings us to theme three. Composable MarTech architecture.
Right, moving away from those monolithic one-size-fits-all suites.
Exactly, connecting best-fit capabilities via APIs instead. Desmond Fua and Nikki Clark both argued that composability is no longer just an IT decision, it's an operating model decision.
Yes, assembling capabilities around business outcomes rather than being tied down by a single vendor, but it's a huge landscape to navigate.
Oh, totally. Scott Brinker and Franz Hermersma just dropped that State of MarTech 2026 report. The landscape has flatlined at around 15,505 products, but underneath that, the churn is massive.
It's a violent churn. And Reimersma had a brilliant critique here. He said, millions of dollars just disappear because CEOs evaluate stacks through an IT lens. So engineering quality instead of a marketing lens, which focuses on revenue growth.
Right. They buy a secure bank vault when they actually needed a storefront. So what does this all mean? We used to buy the fully furnished, move-in-ready house. Now we're buying a massive box of Lego bricks. It gives us ultimate freedom, but it means someone in the organization actually has to be a master builder, right?
That is the perfect analogy. And Anders Bjørnstrand posted about this classic friction between the CMO and the CIO. The CMO wants commercial momentum. They want to build a race car out of those Legos right now.
And the CIO wants governance and scalability. They want to make sure the wheels don't fall off.
Right. So the organizations that win this Lego building phase will be the ones that create a single aligned picture between those two leaders.
Yeah, because all this talk of data, architecture, and orchestration is useless if it doesn't actually result in revenue. Which brings us to our fourth and final theme, marketing ops and the buyer experience.
This is where the rubber meets the road.
It is. We have to talk about the humans running the machines and the humans buying the products. Daryl Alfonso shared a shocking stat. Without strong marketing operations, only 35% of a go-to-market strategy actually survives to the pipeline.
35%. That means 65% of your strategic intent just evaporates into the ether because of broken forms or misrouted leads.
Exactly. And Mike Rizzo made such a great point about this. He said, success in ops is silent, but failure is visible within an hour.
Oh, that is so true. When campaigns launch smoothly, nobody notices. But if one API sync fails, the whole executive team is suddenly breathing down your neck.
Right. It's like being the offensive line in American football. You only get your name called by the announcer when you get a penalty, never when you throw the perfect block.
That's a great way to put it. And Rizzo advocates for a monthly ops scorecard to make those invisible wins visible to leadership so teams can actually stop having to defend their budgets.
Yeah, and if we, well, actually, you had a thought on the bigger picture here.
Yeah, if we connect this to the bigger picture, Bill Buechler hit us with a really harsh truth. 95% of B2B MarTech spend is pointed inward at the seller.
Wow, 95%.
Yeah. Buyers never see your CRM, your forecasting tools, your sales engagement platforms. Over 15 years, our tools grew 100x, but B2B buying actually got measurably harder.
Because we're prioritizing our internal dashboards over their experience. Robin Hatfield echoed this when she talked about attribution. She pointed out that attribution often devolves into these internal turf wars over who gets credit for a deal.
Oh, the classic marketing versus sales fight for sourced pipeline.
Exactly. Well, the buyer just wants a frictionless experience. So to you, the listener, if you are building a stack, are you building it to track your internal scoreboards, or are you actually using it to make your customer's life easier?
That is the question you have to ask yourself. And, you know, to leave you with a final, slightly provocative thought on Stephanie Jennen and Scott Brinker both touched on a concept that is wild to think about regarding who that customer actually is.
Oh, the agentic AI stuff.
Yes. As AI search and agentic AI grow, your website's primary audience might soon be other AI agents researching on behalf of human buyers.
That completely flips the script.
Right. If an AI agent is evaluating your B2B software against a competitor's, does your beautifully designed, human-centric website even matter anymore? Are we entering an era where we have to market to machines first?
Oh, man. Ensuring our data is perfectly structured for an AI to read via an API long before a human ever sees our brand colors, that is a whole new frontier.
It really is.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, channel marketing, AI and B2B marketing, go-to-market, and social selling.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening, everyone.
Absolutely. Thank you for diving deep with us. Don't forget to subscribe. And until next time, keep questioning your stack and keep building for the buyer.